From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for February 26, 2021. Your Milwaukee Bucks are at the Forum this Sunday with the Clippers and Tuesday with the Nuggets, and there will be some fans in the stands. Let's start with a 105-year-old woman from the swamps of Jersey. She beat COVID-19 with a daily diet of gin-soaked raisins. If that's the secret, I'm not going to make it to 105. Cancel culture has struck the Muppets. Before every episode, Disney runs this warning. Some parts of the show might be offensive for stereotyping. Thank goodness Disney cleared that up. Apparently, not all Swedes can cook and not all frogs and bears can talk. Who knew? In the Philippines, pork has gotten so expensive, the locals have switched to rabbit. That seems a bit sacrilegious with Easter just around the corner. From Florida, a Miami lawyer whose pants started on fire during an arson trial has had his license revoked, you think? And our headline of the week is an Alaska woman using an outhouse was attacked by a bear from below. Now try to get that picture out of your head. And finally, two nuns in Ireland attending an exorcism were caught breaking COVID-19 restrictions. Their penance was six Our Fathers and six Hail Marys. And they're probably going to hell for that. On the podcast today, we have Brian Kill, Art Rothschild, Joel Dreesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, thanks, Max. A bit of a rough week for markets. The NASDAQ down 4.9% this week, closing today at 13,192. The NASDAQ still up 2.4% for the year, though. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closing today at 30,927, down 1.8% this week. Still up 1.3% in the year, and in the broader markets, the S&P 500 closed today at 3811, down 2.5% for the week, and still up 1.6% for the year to date. The yield on the 10-year U.S. Treasury moved, as of Thursday afternoon, a bit beyond 1.5%, settling the week at 1.46%, but meaningfully higher than where we began the year. And the Treasury is certainly, I think, indicating some signs that growth might be returning, that at least the expectations for what comes down the line are a little bit better than what we've seen, in the near term here. So, just maybe as we jump off here, worth pointing out that as we record this, the FDA is reviewing a vaccine from Johnson & Johnson for potentially emergency use authorization. The AstraZeneca vaccine got approval to be used in Canada. And so I think we're getting to a point now where we're starting to see a convergence of factors. We're starting to see things pile up in support of overcoming this pandemic. The Biden administration announced today partnerships with a number of businesses, publicly traded businesses, distributing 100 million masks, opening vaccine sites at 100 different sports stadiums, and even providing free rides and paid time off for a number of workers who want to go get vaccines. And so the very thing that allows us to transition to an economy, I think, that's a little bit stronger than the one we're in right now, we're now finding ways to encourage more people, to give more people the opportunity to go do that. Obviously, the big hurdle right now remains the number of vaccines available. And so still not widely available to the general public. We're starting to see teachers in our state get more access, which is a big deal for the reopening of schools, which will certainly help, I think people who have been out of work waiting for an opportunity to get back to work, certainly help them do that as their kids are able to get back into school more full time. But, I think all of those things, big developments on the pandemic fighting front. And I think it sets up pretty nicely for a stock market that, clearly has struggled this week, clearly has, been a bit up and down to start the year. But, Brian, I think some signs of optimism, some things to be worried about as you look kind of maybe at the next year, 2 years for stocks. What's on the horizon? What are you seeing?
Well, Kyle, for certain, let's begin by talking about I think in the context of what's going on today, the optimism as we move forward, your points about the vaccine are right on. We were talking before the show about how many of us have gotten it and the people we know. And, you know, I've heard people kind of complain about the rollout of the vaccine, but I think if you go back literally a year now to when this whole thing began and think, good golly, we pumped out a vaccine and we already got whatever it is, 50 million, 60 million, 70 million people vaccinated. We got this thing on the run. I think it's really a credit to the hard work of so many people. And that allows us then, of course, to move kind of past the pandemic as an issue, at least to see around the corner and to see perhaps some of the economic results from getting back to whatever our new normal is going to look like. And I think that obviously presents a great deal to look forward to in terms of adding jobs and growth to the economy. And I think so the kind of phase two there is that I think we're going to see a lot of growing, improving economic news as the year plays out. I think the third part of that is when you think about the markets is you do have to kind of reconcile in your head that given all these problems last year, the market performed remarkably well. You know, valuations are at a place where we have to pay attention to that. Your comments in the open about interest rates popping up pretty quickly, that's something to keep an eye on. I think on a foundation of a whole bunch of good news, we ought to be a little bit careful about some of the things that potentially could trip us up a little bit in the markets as we move forward. So certainly lots to be optimistic about, but also some caution in terms of how high can stocks go and how fast can we get there?
Yeah, Brian, I want to circle back to some of that in a second, but Art, worth bringing you in here. I know that, you know, as you look at some of the things that are developing right now, as you have conversations with clients, you know, it's hard not to point to the environment we're in as being very similar to March of 2009, April of 2009, where all of a sudden we had started to see some signs that maybe the worst was behind us. And certainly then we didn't have any idea that the financial crisis was over, but things had gotten so bad for the economy and for markets. And this time's a little different in that regard, in that markets haven't been beat up as bad, but things had gotten so bad economically that, you know, I think by later in the year 2009, and especially as we transitioned into that following year, there was a lot more optimism about the direction we were headed. You know, maybe this is similar in that regard, in that, you know, we've got some potential room to run now as we start to emerge from these issues.
Yeah, I think the saying goes, it's always darkest just before the dawn. And we're well beyond the point of the greatest darkness at this point. Back in March of 2009, they were talking about green shoots. We didn't see them yet, but supposedly, you know, they'd come and things would start to improve. But we were down 25% as of March 9th of that year for that year. We dropped 37% the year before that. And so people weren't really in the mood to be investing. Now, again, that would have been where we were this past year on March 23rd, coincidentally, both in March when we hit bottom with the stock market, then down 35%, you know, from the highs of the year. So we've come a long way. But what Brian said is so true. And what you've been saying over the past couple of years with it's about COVID. It's about and Chairman Powell is echoing your sentiments clearly when he talks about we've got to get the virus under control. Once we get the virus under control, we don't really know what lies ahead. Even though, as Brian points out, stocks are relatively pricey. If corporate profits continue to rise, as you so eloquently put it in an article that's going to be in our newsletter coming out soon, you have to look beyond the profits in the near future to the profits over the long haul to accurately price, you know, where stocks could be. So with stocks being up from that March 9th of 2009 low, looking at just the S&P, over 400%. So I feel good about the long-term view for stocks. Coming back to the short-term view, what happened this week, you know, for obvious reasons, the yield on the 10-year Treasury spiked, and so people start to second-guess their commitments to tech stocks that might be overpriced and everything else. But I think it's a very good point, or it's a very good point in time for us to look forward. But it's also, as you suggested earlier, a good point to look back. Look at how far we've come over the past year. doing reviews with our clients, looking at 12-month returns. It's spectacular, and we'll probably be looking even better going forward. So I feel very good about where we are. I feel good about where we're going. Optimism tempered with caution, I would suggest.
Yeah, and just to stress, again, I think the difference between kind of the short-term outlook and the long-term outlook, the issues that are really challenging for us are obviously valuations. It's obviously the potential for rates to rise pretty significantly. Even this pandemic carrying on a little bit longer than what I think a lot of us thought, even if it's not summer when we recover, it's late this year or early next year when we recover, which are possibilities depending on variants and hiccups with vaccine rollout. But that doesn't really challenge the longer term view all that much. Maybe it pushes it out 6 months or a year. Certainly interest rates rising are going to cause an issue short term to, what our kind of forecast for stock prices should be. But I think as a stock investor, you've got a longer term view. Worth remembering that earnings grew over the last 5 years, 10% on an annualized basis, as you project that out to 2022. And so I think if we're anywhere near that, that's pretty significant support for stocks where they are today, for stocks to run even a little bit higher from here. And if earnings growth normalizes, this year, next year, into the future, I think it sets up really nicely for stocks to have a pretty meaningful recovery over a 5 or 10 year period, forgetting for a second that one of the big tailwinds to stock prices over the next 5 or 10 years is just how low interest rates have been, right? That investors have been forced into those stocks. And even if rates double from here, a 3% yield on a 10-year treasury is still not all that attractive relative to what you can get, from stocks for the most part. And so I think there is a meaningful wind at the back of stocks long-term. Brian, I think you rightfully point out those issues, especially short-term are going to be a challenge. Longer-term, there's still hurdles we have to overcome, but I don't think they're insurmountable as we look at kind of, the longer-term path.
In the present, I get troubled like when the Fed chairman this week, and again, this is not to detract from the enthusiasm in the least, but to be fair and see the bigger perspective, I think is part of what we're supposed to do, right? And I think when Chairman Powell says we got some challenges ahead of us, and when he says it's going to be a while until labor comes back to where we want, and when he says, that inflation's going to be a 2 or 3 or 4 year event down the road, that we don't need to worry about that. In itself, none of those things are really very good things. And yet the market reacts very positively because what the market heard was we're going to keep interest rates low for a while longer. And I think that's all well and good until it isn't. And I think, Kyle, you talk about interest rates going from 1.5 to 3. Well, if it's the US Treasury, that's another $500 billion to the money supply every year, or to the debt burden, interest cost covering the debt burden. So, I do think I just want to keep my eye on that stuff. And I want to make sure, as you point out, that certainly not problems that we can't solve, but problems that we need to solve over the long run to allow ourselves that kind of long-term growth that we think is on its way.
Yeah, Brian, I think, those are the correct things to be pointing out in terms of what are the long-term hurdles from the current problems we're causing. I think the saving grace may be that if we do get the economic growth that we're pushing for, we remove a lot of those burdens.
We'll grow our way out of it. Yeah.
You hope that you get to 3% on a 10-year treasury for the right reason, right? That you get there because growth was enough that all of a sudden we can afford the burden of higher interest rates, right? And I think that's a great thing for stock investors because it means that, companies participated along the way. It's a great thing for bond investors because it means they can get more from what they're investing on the bond piece of their portfolio. It's going to mean that we've got to pay closer attention to how we allocate portfolios, but, we've been doing that all along anyways. And so those are absolutely the right places to be looking.
Kyle, one of the things that you and I've talked about a lot over the years that you brought up in our research meeting on Monday, was a long article in the paper in the Wall Street Journal today about the number of IPOs over $1 billion, whether it be traditional IPOs or through SPACs or whatnot. And, for so many years, I've been told follow the flow of capital, and you're getting to a point now where perhaps investors are unwilling to get that 1 or 2% in a bond. They're looking for something more. You know, they've gotten past the point where, you know, they're so frightened about the financial crisis, so frightened about COVID that they're willing to take some additional risk. And in order to raise capital as a corporation, you're going to have to issue stock. And, you know, I hate to say that for these last few months, there's been a spike in that sort of thing. And that means that the future will look very much the same. But I do think there's every reason to believe that it isn't just that each stock will grow, but the number of stocks will grow, the number of equities will grow, and that the market can expand kind of, if you will, horizontally as well as vertically as well. And I think that speaks to a whole different kind of growth that I think would be very attractive over the long run.
It also brings up the topic of speculation. And this goes way back, Brian, to when I was betting you or you were betting me as to what was going to happen, you know, during the tech wreck.
Right.
As I remember, you won the bet, so I'm not betting with you about anything at this point.
Did you ever pay me for that, Art? I don't remember.
I've got to look it up. but in any event, I've commented on this before. The GameStop thing came up again this
right.
week. You know, the stock
right.
doubles, and then it goes down. And so in Bitcoin, I've been asked about Bitcoin. I mean, thank God people have something they can go play with somewhere else. We're not playing with that stuff. We're investors. We're looking for the long-term return that you can get by methodically investing in well-diversified, well-balanced portfolios, and let people buy those IPOs. Let people sell or buy or do whatever they want to do with Bitcoin and GameStop. We're just going to make money. There's so many stocks out that, you know, I looked at for a client this week. A client has a bunch of Kimberly-Clark. That stock's gone nowhere. Pfizer with the vaccines. That stock's gone nowhere. So there's so many opportunities. And Kyle, I think you mentioned that in your article about how some stocks are overpriced, sure, but there's a whole bunch of stocks out there that are just ripe for the picking, which will help, you know, lift all stocks over time, you know, as people, you know, turn their attention toward those.
To that point, Art, the top 10 stocks in the S&P 500 trade at 31.3 times next 12-month earnings. The other 490 trade at something like 18.5 times the next 12-month earnings. And so if we talk about valuations being a thing that we need to overcome, that is certainly true, although it may be more concentrated in some of the biggest names out there than what we think. And then moving beyond that, I think another meaningful challenge to investors the past 5 or 10 years had been that some of the best ideas weren't publicly traded companies, right? If you wanted access to high growth potential businesses, you had to be a qualified investor. You had to be able to, you know, put millions of dollars into some private equity deal or some, you know, privately funded company. And that's just not, you know, that's not feasible for most investors to do, forgetting for a second that, you know, most people don't have that kind of cash to commit. The other part of that is, you know, you've got to do it a lot of times for one of them to pay off, right? And so you can't just afford to do one. You've got to pick 20 or 30 companies and hope that the one that hits is one that you bought. And what we're seeing, as Brian points out, is a lot of these companies are finally coming to the public market, whether it's through traditional IPOs or direct listings or SPACs, these kind of you know, vehicles constructed to bring these businesses to market. But it's giving access to investors to much better ideas, to ideas that weren't in the market before. And so if we talk about, you know, going back to the earnings growth forecasts, you know, we always talk about the S&P 500, but that says nothing about all the smaller companies that aren't in the S&P 500. And for a long time, those businesses were kind of ignored because the highest earning potential, the highest growth potential businesses, as I said, weren't public. Well, now that they are becoming public, now that some of them are finding ways to earn money, not just spend money, all of a sudden, the, you know, the forecast for growth for U.S. businesses looks a little bit better, right? And it makes investing a little more attractive relative to just what broad economic growth looks like, because you can capture some of the, you know, the stronger pieces of the economy, a lot of those tech names that just weren't publicly available. And so I think it's going to be really important that we continue to see more of those businesses come to market. It means there's going to be a lot of stinkers. There's going to be a lot of places to avoid. But it also means, you know, as investors, we get to capitalize on some of those better ideas.
You know, Kyle, there's kind of another tangential point to that too, which is I think, you know, over the last decade, we've really talked about the market as the market, kind of as a, you know, a one unit, kind of going up and going down and kind of risk on and risk off. And that one thing has been dominated by those 10 companies, give or take. But I think where we're going might be kind of what you alluded to is not the market necessarily going up, but different pieces of the market showing opportunities and different pieces of the market performing in very disparate ways. And I think it'll be an environment where picking the right thing is going to make a whole lot more difference than it did in the past, whether that be an individual company or picking a sector or a theme or a strategy that makes sense. I think the good stuff is going to be good and the bad stuff's going to be bad. And that really hasn't been the case, in the 10 years that we've just passed. So different opportunity set, but I think, you know, there's always ways to take advantage of things if you're paying attention. And I think we'll have lots of opportunities in the road ahead, you know?
Joel, a lot of big economic data this week, obviously a revision to GDP, typically kind of the biggest headline economic number, but, you know, a lot of details below the surface as well.
Yeah, Kyle, we had a lot of numbers this week. You know, it struck me listening to the rest of you talk. I'm hearing more comparisons to fighting the pandemic as fighting a war. And so today we had, you know, corporate titans weighing in on this as we've had in the past to sort of say, hey, we're part of this country. We want to step up and do something about it. The you know, what Brian alluded to before is just sort of the technological development, which a lot of times occurs during war. And then after war, we see it, those technologies and those developments spread to other things. And the other thing, I mean, just thinking of like back to World War II is the pent up demand. And so we're seeing that, you know, we talk about how 70% of the GDP is driven by consumer spending. So, you know, we got the big stimulus, economic impact, payments last spring and people went out and spent those. We got some more last month and people, you know, went out and spent those. We saw that in data today on consumer spending. You know, we're actually back almost to the level we were at a year ago with consumer spending. So that's, you know, and those are broader strokes that's showing that things are coming back. I mean, we look at particular things like housing. We had more numbers this week on housing. Prices are, you know, double digit increases from what they were the year before. Manufacturing, durable goods orders overall are back above where they were before the pandemic. A good sign within those numbers is we've got, there's a number in there on, it's a proxy for business investments. And those are up even faster than overall durable goods, which, you know, suggests that maybe the companies are saying they took pause during the pandemic to say there are things that we need to invest in to make our companies work better and to be more productive. And so all of those are sorts of things that, point well to the future. And then also on the other side, getting back to the whole employment thing, you know, we, again, this week we saw initial claims for unemployment go down for the third week in a row, but they're still, I mean, we're a year into this and those claims are still, you know, we're still seeing more than 700,000 Americans filing first time for unemployment. And that's three times the level that we had a year ago. So that's, you know, back to Chairman Powell, I mean, that's still sort of a concern in the near term.
Yeah, and I think maybe that's a good place to kind of wrap up today is, you know, Chairman Jerome Powell spoke in front of Congress, rightfully pointing out that inflation, while a long-term factor in the Fed's decision-making, is clearly not the most important piece right now, that the labor market is ultimately what's driving the Fed's decision to remain accommodative. It's driving the Fed's decision, while maybe not directly saying it, to encourage fiscal stimulus, to encourage, I think, the direction of policymakers towards, supporting spending, towards supporting getting people back to work, rather than trying to combat inflation that isn't here yet, and which at its worst has, in the past decade, really only gotten towards their target and never really surpassing their target for very long. And so I think, we're rightfully hearing from the Fed that inflation is not the concern they're worried about right now. It doesn't mean it won't be down the line. It certainly doesn't mean that, investors can forget about it forever. But, I think employment's going to continue to be key for a while.
Yeah, I do think this is a time that you should not be, to use the Wall Street adage, fighting the Fed. Chairman Powell has said it loud. He said it clearly. He said repeatedly now for months, they are going to, as you indicated, they're working to get full employment. And full employment now is many more people employed than are currently employed. And read his lips. He is not going to do anything that's going to exacerbate a rise in interest rates. I wouldn't be surprised, and some of the things I've been reading suggest, if he wants to double down on his bond buying, that would send a powerful message to Wall Street and bring treasury yields down if he wants to increase his quantitative easing, if he thought it was that important. And they're going to keep interest rates low. And it's going to be for a while, and that's going to continue to stimulate spending. And I think, stocks over the long haul, this is my own personal view. But we'll find out. Next week's going to be interesting, given what happened in treasury yields, this week.
Well, with that, thanks for listening. We enjoy doing the program for you every week, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.